This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome to This Week in the NFL. We're going to add two episodes for This Week in the NFL for the Super Bowl. So on this episode, like we talked about last week, we're gonna break down the AFC and the NFC title games that just happened on Sunday. And then coming next Tuesday or Wednesday, we're going to do a full Super Bowl preview and potentially have a special guest on here. I've been teasing I teased a different guest. They didn't show, but I think this guy's going to show. So we'll see. Someone who anyone who listened to the Sports Lounge may remember, not senior, but should be great. So as always, I'm your host, the Cowboy, joined by my co-host, Nostradamus himself. I'm Nostradamus as well. John D'Amato, how you doing, John?
Well, in the words of your famous color commentator, Scott Zolak, America's worst nightmare is back. I don't know if he's talking about us every week, but yeah, well, the Patriots are back, so I don't know if that's going to scare away all the listeners of the show, especially the poor Saints fans, which we'll get into. But yep, it's the Patriots again. It's like an annual tradition. You go into the Royal Rumble the week before and after the watching your team in a Super Bowl on Super Bowl Sunday. It's a nice tradition to have, going to the NXT and the Royal Rumble, you know, matter what city it is, and then watching your team in the Super Bowl.
It does make for a great couple of weeks, I'll tell you that. And then, you know, actually, we're even upping it a little bit this year. Senior and I are going to Thunder Celtics at 2 o'clock on Super Bowl Sunday.
Oh my
God!
At
the TD Garden, so it's going to be—it's pandemonium, baby.
Yeah, that's a nice instead of watching that pregame show. Yeah, that's a nice game.
Yeah, little Russell Westbrook, little Paul George.
Yep.
My man Tatum, Kyrie. Kyrie's playing great. I know we're not talking NBA here, but.
Yeah, we will soon. Yeah,
We will be soon. So, incredible week of football here. Only two games, obviously, the conference championship games. First time in NFL history that both conference championship games go to overtime. Controversy in both games, but end of the day, real exciting day of football that ends with the Rams and the Patriots partying like it's 2001. So it's a fitting way for if this is it for Tom, I mean, I shouldn't even say it. So never mind. We'll never say it's going to be it for Tom. But yeah, just going to be a great game. Can't wait to talk about it. But let's talk about these games first. So Rams at Saints. We, along with a lot of other people, I heard, really like the Saints in this one. The Saints jump out 13-0, and can't hold the lead. You have some, you know, real questionable calls at the end of the game. Ultimately, the Rams win 26-23 on a 57-yard field goal by Greg Zuerlein. There's a whole lot that happened in between there, John. I'm going to kick it over to you for this one to give the initial thought, because I'd like to give the initial thought on the night game.
Well, you can't avoid it. Unfortunately, a great game was marred by it's going to wind up being a historic game because it was marred by the horrible pass interference call. I mean, we could go on for 6 hours about that, but it's going to wind up being a landmark game because it's definitely going to result in there being a change in the rules where you could now use replay on penalties, which is something that they were trying to do away from because it's going to make the games, you know, they want to keep the games into a nice 3-hour window, and that's going to stretch these games out to 3.5-4 hours. But they have to after something like that was so blatant. It's something they have to, and it's a combination of all the, you know, rule changes over the years, and it's leading to this. And So somebody made a and they, you know, they were letting them play the whole game, and I think the refs were kind of trained, kind of last 2 minutes. They're like, okay, we're gonna keep whistles, you know, in the pocket and keep our flags in the pocket, but something blatant like that, you got to call it, and which is unfortunate. It's nice that they let them play, but unfortunately, something like that, you have to be able to call something blatant, and they dropped the ball on that. So sorry for the Saints fans, but on the other hand, the Saints you can't use as an excuse. What I took out of the game was shockingly that Sean McVay outcoached Sean Payton, and Jared Goff outplayed Drew Brees. The bottom line, and that's what got him across, and they got a gutsy win on the road, the Rams.
Yep. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Obviously, that was pass interference, right? There's no question about that. Terrible missed call. Not a whole lot more you can say. It's a missed call. But at the end of the day, the Saints were up 13-0 at home. I mean, it should have been more than 13-0, right? They settling for field goals. The Rams tried to give away this game in the first quarter, and the Saints didn't take it. And
yeah, we could pat ourselves on the back as well. We called that. We knew the Saints would come out crisp this time because they came out shaky last week versus the Eagles. But this week they were ready from the jump. And it's a combination of give the Rams defense credit for holding them to the toast. Yep. Field goals, but also Benjamin Watson was out, and that backup, the kid Arnold,
got to make that catch.
Yeah, that's it would have been. It's a good catch. It's a tough spot for a backup tight end that only has a few catches in his career to make that. But in a big game like that, that's a 4-point difference, and that's of course between winning and losing. So, yep. Well, you have to have backups. Yeah, you got to make that.
Yeah, I mean, and the Saints had multiple chances to put the game away, and it's on them that they were in a position where not getting a pass interference call on 3rd and 10 cost them the game, right? I mean, of course, it should have been called. Egregious blown call. If it is called, I mean, the Saints almost certainly are just running the clock out and kicking a field goal with 20 seconds left, which effectively would end the game, right? But at the end of the day, like I said, I think the Rams showed a lot of heart. Goff grew up right before our eyes. I mean, I didn't know that he had that performance in him, because the Saints defense played well, and Gurley obviously did absolutely nothing. He had just a terrible game for when he was in. So it was really on Goff to win the game. And he made some great throws down the stretch. I mean, particularly, remember one rolling to his right, coming back a little bit across the field to Gerald Everett on a huge, huge play. And the Saints also won the toss. I mean, we're going to talk about the next game. And, you know, you have this uproar about, whoever, it's all luck. Whoever wins the toss is going to win the game. Well, they're up 13-0 at home, and they blow the lead, right? And the game ends out in overtime. And then you got Drew Brees. You're at home. You win the toss, and he throws a pick, right? I mean, the Saints had every opportunity to win this game, and I felt like, I mean, the Rams played very well. The Rams played a great game, but a lot of questionable stuff for the Saints, and not, you know, they did not perform, in my opinion. The one everyone's talking about that I completely agree with was that, you know, when they had the ball on the drive with the pass interference, when they got the first down after the long play to Ginn, obvious running situation. You need to make the Rams burn their timeouts, and they throw an incomplete pass. It's like Peyton was getting too cute for his own good.
Yeah, but I have to put that one on Brees, though. Peyton caught a lot of heat from that, but that was just a simple, safe pass that Brees made a horrible throw. Brees threw
it
right to the turf. Yeah, so for Peyton, he's thinking, I got Brees 40. Brees makes that pass 99 times out of 100, so it was really like a run play. It was a safe pass, so Peyton took a lot of heat for that, but and it's kind of covering a breeze because he really messed that one up. And also the interception, it's got to be, you know, a little bit under. He did get hit, but on the interception, another blatant thing is Michael Thomas. I don't know what he was doing. He didn't see. He lost track of the ball
he was
on defense. Yeah, that usually happens to the defender. That happened to him, and he's the receiver, and he did nothing to stop the guy from intercepting. A terrible play by
Thomas.
If
he would have seen the ball, he might have been able to catch it and like score. The guy fell down.
Yeah, either that, in that place, you got to beat a defender when it's going like that. That ball was in the air forever for it to be turned. And it wasn't a nice play by the Johnson guy, kid, but Thomas made a horrific play. That kind of went. With the bad call, the Breeze's passes and that Thomas play, really they kind of caught a break. They didn't get as much heat for that because, you know, all the emphasis was on the ref and the bad call. But they got to share the blame.
I mean, Breeze's throw on the missed call was atrocious. Terrible, terrible throw.
I mean,
it should have been
crazy.
Picked. I mean, all the guy had to do was turn around instead of, you know, if Roby Coleman turns around, he picks it off easy.
Yeah, that's what Aikman said. He said, oh, that's a pick six the other way. I don't know if it was, let's not get carried away. I don't know if it was all that, but Troy, but that was a lot going on there. Too much.
So not Drew Brees' finest hour. He says he's coming back for next year. I mean, his numbers were great this year, but he really did tail off a bit in the second half of the season, basically from the time they played the Cowboys. So up until then, I mean, he was neck and neck with Mahomes for the MVP. And then from that game on, his performance tailed off. The guy's 40 years old. It's going to happen eventually, but I think real blown opportunity for them. And I don't know if they get this far next year. Great season, but tough stuff for them with two just real tough playoff losses back to back with the Diggs catch last year and now the missed call, and then Zerline with the greatest 57-yard field goal I've ever seen. That thing would have been good from like 70. I mean, just boom, right down the middle. It was a great kick. I mean, that was a little Vinatieri-esque by Zerline, knocking through the 48-yarder to send the game to overtime, and then ice water on the 57-yarder.
Yeah, I mentioned it in this week's upcoming column that's got to be for a fan base. That's got to be probably the worst in history, the worst back-to-back defeats to end your season. And I really can't think of a team that had a worse back-to-back than that for that poor fan base. So.
Yeah, it's brutal. It's brutal. I mean, it's like 2 years in a row of like the ball going through Buckner's legs.
Yeah, give the Rams credit though; they really shut down the Saints running game. Kamara only did anything through the air. They really had they really made him one dimensional and put a lot of pressure on Breeze because he was without weapons other than Thomas. The receivers are mediocre. And,
it's smart the way they played. I mean, they should probably do the same thing next week, which we'll talk about. I mean, they dared Breeze to beat him deep because he hasn't been getting it out there on the deep ball in the second half of the season, and he couldn't do it. I mean, he had the one play again that wasn't a great throw either. I mean, the guy didn't, again, the defender like didn't turn around. But what do you think of? I mean, I was really, really beside myself when McVay kicked.
Didn't go for it.
When
McVay
kicked that. Yeah. I mean, I could not believe it. I was shocked. I was just absolutely shocked. It seemed like such an obvious. You gotta go. I mean, I know it worked out, but you gotta go for it there, I think. I mean, at the half-yard line. Worst case, you're giving the ball back to them at the half-yard line. It seems just like a crazy, crazy decision to knock. Like, very, very, again, and then to kick the 57-yard field goal. Like, that's ballsy to kick that, to attempt that 57-yard field goal. But and then it's weird just to not go for it. You think they just, you know, we just tie the game and see what happens. I mean, it almost cost them the game. Came very close to costing them the game.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily agree with it, but I could tell what he was thinking, because there's a lot of time. There's about what? There was about 3 minutes.
Yep. Yes.
And you go up, and if you go up 24-20, that's it. So you're giving Breeze four downs. So that means Breeze, you know, the Saints, they're going to go all out for the touchdown, and they have all that time. So I think he was more confident in tying it up and his defense either getting a stop or working it out like it did, where maybe they'll just give up a field goal and they could get one right back. Like if you give Breeze a four downs with all that time.
Yeah. I still think it's nuts. I think it was like a moment of pussiness for whatever reason. But
it worked out for him. But
it did.
But the field goal, I think, was a no-brainer, though. Greg DeLeg in a dome, 57-yard, and you saw it, and he justified it. That might have been good from 70. So
that's what I said,
He nailed that one. So, yeah, to me, that's a no-brainer.
So, Rammers moving on to the Super Bowl. I got my NFC preseason Super Bowl prediction correct. So, pat on the back for the Cowboy. And I was very excited to not get my AFC preseason prediction correct. So we'll move on to game two. New England in Kansas City. We talked about it last week. On paper, tough matchup for the Pats. The Chiefs at home. The Patriots have not been a good road team. The Chiefs' offense is incredible. The weather ended out being fine. A little bit cold, but nothing too crazy. And just what a game. What a game this was. The Patriots up 14-0 at halftime. It should have been 21-0. They completely dominated. I mean, as a Pats fan, I was petrified at halftime. I knew that. When you don't drive the stake in, especially on the road, when you have a chance to drive the stake in and you don't drive the stake in, and you got somebody as good as Mahomes on the other side of the field, that, you know, he's gonna get his. And the Patriots with the 14-0 lead, but Brady with a very, very uncharacteristic, just like god awful interception at the friggin' 1 yard line. Prevented the game from being 21-0. Indeed, 21-0, the game's basically over, right? But 14-0 with Kansas City getting the ball, you knew the game wasn't over. And you know, I was talking to I watched the game with my uncle and Ryder. I told him, I said, you know, the Patriots in the first half put all sorts of heat on Mahomes, blitz, 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 blitz. I said, Reed's too smart to not adjust for this, and you're going to start seeing them. You're going to start seeing him throw the ball to Damian Williams, screen passes, stuff to Damian Williams out of the backfield, because the Patriots haven't been able to cover that all season anyway, never mind when they're bringing the kitchen sink on every play, and that's exactly what the Chiefs did. They started working that in, and the Patriots couldn't stop them in the second half. And it became one of these really, really fun games where I know you're not a huge fan. I guess this game kind of had it all for you because the defense was phenomenal in the first half. But this one of these games where it's just so exciting where you know it's just back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and kind of whoever gets the ball last wins. And both these guys, both Brady and Mahomes, engineered multiple just super clutch, great drives in the fourth quarter. Nobody wanted to give an inch, and came down to the coin toss. Patriots won the coin toss. When the Patriots won the coin toss, we here in New England, and I'm sure a lot of people watching at home said, okay, if I'm a Kansas City fan right now, what's a worst case scenario for me coming into this game? That my terrible defense has to stop Tom Brady, or we lose the game, and that's what happened. I mean, they converted 3 third-and-10s on that last drive. It was just a virtuoso performance. I mean, I feel so fortunate to be alive during this time and to be a Patriots fan, because this run they're on is just ridiculous. I mean, it's every year it gets more. It's more ridiculous in a league that's essentially where the rules are set up to prevent this from happening. To go to five of six, whatever it is, five of six Super Bowls, and eight straight AFC title games, and just even this year when there was a down year, it looks like they were like rope-a-doping through the regular season because they've been a different team in the playoffs. And just I was in awe, as per usual. I was in awe. The guy's like 2 years older than me. I go out and play basketball with guys who are like 24, 25 years old, and like there's like I'm at like a significant disadvantage because of my age, and to see him doing what he's doing, it's just incredible. Sorry for all the gushing, John. You could give us more of the X's and O's.
No, that's quite okay because I'm in a rare situation. It seems like the 50% of the world is Patriot haters, and then there's 49% of you guys, which is you know, the Patriot lovers, and they can't do no wrong. I'm in the 1%. I'm kind of neutral. I do admire their greatness, and also I like to be the contrarian. So when I see, you know, a lot of people saying, "Oh, they just cheat and they're just lucky and all that nonsense," you know, I like to go against that, and so part of me that does like to see them win, and also I like to see a good game, and I guarantee you the Super Bowl is going to be in a great game. Other than the Eagles Super Bowl, all the Super Bowls under Brady have come down to pretty much like the last minute, the last play. So
right, the first Eagles Super Bowl.
Yeah, as a football fan, I'm all on that, so I don't mind that they're in it. But yeah, there's a lot of things to get into. The overtime situation that you alluded to, this is to in the upcoming column, I said just leave the overtime the way it is. Now there's going to be calls just because New England won. If Kansas City won, there wouldn't be all this crying about changing the overtime. I think they should keep the overtime the way it is. They already adjusted it from the sudden death. Because this is a perfect example. There were two overtime games. The one team that won the toss lost. And in the second game, the team that right. won the toss won it. So your defense got to stop them. But there's no way. I'm sorry. I'm not a fan of the college overtime. I think that's a joke. That's not football where you just give the team at the ball at the 25. And even if the NFL does adjust they may do it where the other team at least has a chance to touch the ball from the kickoff. They'll never go the college route where you just give it to the 25.
That's till it's not like 70, real football. 70. It's
but
junk.
They might adjust it though to where you know, like if a team gets a touchdown, like in a Patriots situation, where the other team will have a chance to tie it up.
I don't know if you've ever heard Belichick. What he has said, what he would like the overtime to be, and I think it just—I mean, I think it makes
just
sense.
Just play the whole quarter.
Yeah, that's what he says. He says, quarter, you know, from my perspective, if you want to, you know, you want it to be fair and you want it to have real strategy, you just play a quarter. You just play a quarter, and you know, when the clock runs out, the clock runs out, and whoever wins the game wins the game. I mean, I don't see how you get more fair than that, right? But
that's fine too, but. But I have no problems with them just leaving it the way it is. They already adjusted it from the sudden death. They improved it. And
it's not easy to go down and score a touchdown, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if your defense can't stop the team from scoring a touchdown, I mean, it is what it is, right?
Yeah, if you look at all the overtime games since they changed it, the team that won the initial toss, it's probably about 50-50 or 60-40. I don't think – if it's something like a great – like 80-20, then I can understand.
I mean, you've got a couple of big ones in the playoffs, right? The first one ever in the playoffs was Tebow to Demaryius Thomas, right?
Right.
and now this one, and again, the Falcons Super Bowl, which – I mean, in that game – I don't care if the Falcons got the ball. They weren't scoring a touchdown. I mean, that was a train. That was a train rolling downhill at that point.
Yeah, but they didn't. Nobody in Atlanta complained about it. They were more complaining about blowing a 28-3 lead.
Right. In this game, this one, I can see it because it really felt like if the Chiefs won the toss, I had zero confidence that the Patriots would keep him out of the end zone. The way Mahomes was playing. I mean, I thought this game really was like one of those where it really did come down to the coin toss.
Yeah, that's why a lot of people complain about the overtime because Mahomes, the golden boy, didn't get the ball, and I already see it. Mahomes is already the camera loves him. Like, you know, every time like the Chiefs, you know, did something on couldn't stop him on defense. They went to like 20 shots of Mahomes on the sidelines. He's already doing the Brady thing, begging for extra roughing the passer calls, which you know, I'm sure he'll get in the future.
He's a great player.
No, he deserves it, but you can see the hype machine is rolling, and he's going to get his chance, and you see the Chiefs going to waste no time. They gave Sutton one day of reprieve, and then they fired him today on a Tuesday.
The Chiefs defense wasn't that bad, you know, until the end. They've always had trouble. They had trouble stopping the run all year, but the Patriots ran all over them in the first half. But turnover, I mean, that was a huge interception. They kept him in the game when the offense was doing shit with that turnover. And then they held the Patriots to 3 in the third quarter. And, I mean, the bonehead play by D Ford. I mean, the game was over. If D Ford's not offside there, I mean, they made the interception.
I could see though why the Patriots came out. That rough in the passer was garbage. As a neutral observer, I gotta tell you that one. Yeah, that was garbage. But another thing that slid under the radar that Mahomes didn't get much heat for, that in that first half, he missed a wide open 7-0. Yeah, he missed a wide open, and then he took like a 20-yard sack and took him out of field goal range.
Right, back to back plays.
So instead of 7-7, and then New England went right back down, bing, bang, boom, and it's 14-0. So instead of at least a 7-3, that was all on Mahomes to me in that first half. Yeah, that went under with all the excitement and his greatness in the second half, sure. But that was an egregious play in the first half that put his team in the hole.
Agreed. And I thought Reed coached a good game, but Belichick, it was another kind of masterclass by Belichick. I mean, I think we talked about this coming in, that really, you know, in a perfect world, when you're playing a team like the Chiefs, right, pound the rock, keep that offense off the field. And, I mean, they had the big explosion in the fourth quarter. But other than that, I mean, that's what the Patriots did. That's why they won the game. They stayed super committed to the run, even when it wasn't working, and just trusted Brady to convert third downs. And that three-headed running back was real. All three guys were real effective. I kind of liked how they used Burkhead as the closer. Like, I wasn't expecting that. But, you know, you kind of saw it with the Rams, too. There's something to be said for these guys. Like, Burkhead was injured for a lot of the year. So he's got very fresh legs, like in C.J. Anderson, the same kind of deal. Where, you know, these guys who haven't been getting the shit beat out of them all year, they get a little juice in their legs for the end of the game. The Chiefs also made a great stop on 4th-and-1. I mean, that was a huge, huge play at the time.
Oh, but your Patriot Nation was they were ready to hang. They're like, why'd you give the ball to Burkhead?
I didn't like the play call. But it wasn't because of Burkhead. It was because
of the safety.
It was. It was a great play. Not because of Burkhead. Just in general, it's the same thing I talked about with the Ezekiel Elliott play call the week before. So it's got nothing to do with the running back. Just, you know, pounding it up the middle on 4th down. But then, to be fair, on the next 4th-and-1, I was saying it was like an inch. And I was just saying, sneak, don't run it up the middle. And they gave it to Michelle, and he walked into the end zone up the middle.
But sometimes you got to give credit to Optimus. That was a great play by Sorensen, the safety. It happens. But as far as Andy Reid goes, I only have two demerits on him. First of all, the opening, he won the toss to open the game. It should have took the ball, man. You know,
especially
establish
with
yourself.
That offense, yep.
Yeah. You're relying on a shaky defense that, you know, off it's one good game. Come on. And number two was the challenge on the Hogan play.
Man, that was close. A lot of people thought it wasn't a catch. I thought it was, but it was just at that point in the game. I'm with you though. You got to be sure.
That was a big timeout.
You got to be sure.
That was a big timeout to lose at that time. So. But other than that, I don't get on Reed's coaching. You know, everybody wants to, you know, jump on a bandwagon because of his poor record. But I didn't see nothing egregious with that defense. He did the best game he could.
Yeah, I mean, those halftime adjustments, maybe you could have made them a little sooner, I guess. But it's just one of those games. Great game, historically great game, I think.
But also, how about, can I hear somebody, instead of saying, Grady, Gronk, and Burkhead, I haven't I don't hear too many of your Patriot Nation praising the offensive line. Zero sacks in the playoffs.
Oh, they've been phenomenal.
Yeah, come
especially
on.
Especially considering they lost Solder, right? I know he wasn't great for the Giants, but, I mean, you lost Solder, and then you drafted Isaiah Wynn, and he didn't play a down. I mean, they've been – Brady's great at getting the ball out, and that's been really the way they've gotten it done in the playoffs. But, I mean, not just the keeping Brady clean, but the way they plow in the road for the run.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And their pass rush. You always talk about winning the game in the trenches. Two games in a row, I mean, against really good offenses, the Patriots have generated a better pass rush than they have all season. I mean, they sacked Mahomes four times, and, I mean, they were in his face the whole game.
Kyle Van Noy is really stepping his game up.
Yeah. Oh, he played great. It's a real interesting matchup with the Rams for a lot of reasons that I'm excited to get into. But a little sneak preview is, you know, everybody says what the blueprint is to beat the Patriots, right?
Yeah. So all you got to do is get pressure on Brady up the middle, and he'll fold. Yeah, like it's so easy, like it's been done so many times. Oh. Yeah. Well,
if you were gonna pick two guys to get pressure up the middle on Brady without having to blitz, the Rams probably have two of the four guys in the league who you would want in the middle, right? So it's very, very interesting.
And as we spoke, as we spoke last week, it was interesting. A couple of days after we spoke, after our last cast, it came out how Sue's contract and how all these incentives he gets for, you know, for winning the playoffs. So it definitely seems like he was coasting all year, and he was waiting for his big payday. He's turning on the engines right now. He gets like a half a mil for each playoff win, and I think another extra mil if they win the Super Bowl. Yeah. So
maybe there's something to be said for it, honestly, because the Patriots, I mean, they didn't play like this all year. I mean, Brady's gone out of his way to not take hits this year. And, you know, just kind of, it really feels like they were just trying to get through the regular season. Even, like, you know, Gronk.
Oh, yeah, he was in on every play. Like, he would only play, like, half the game during the regular season. And plus, his blocking was phenomenal, too. He's a big part of that offensive line.
And the Rams are in a similar kind of scenario as the Pats in that they're in, like, a shit division.
Yeah, they coasted, yeah.
Where they can coast. And, I mean, I know, you know, coasting into the two seed is not what they wanted, but it worked out for both of these teams. And, you know, copycat league, I think you might see some more coasting next year.
Well, not every team can do that. So, you know, some divisions have more than one than one mediocre team in it. You know.
Right. Look at the Steelers. The Steelers tried it. But you can't coast into 9-7. Is it gonna get it done? But anyway, John, what a great great week, Patriots Nation. We're all fired up here, man. I can't.
I got one more thing. Tony Romo.
For his
pressing outlook on every play where he called the last seven plays. But I just got a question. When he was playing with the Cowboys, did he call those fourth quarter interceptions that he was about to throw in the huddle? Because being that he knows, you know, what play is coming up, did he call all those fourth quarter interceptions and those fumbles ahead of time?
Poor Cowboys, you know, little Cowboys shade. Hey, he's real good at the booth. I mean, I agree. The praise has been like a little over the top this week.
I was one of the guys that didn't last year. I was like, oh, everybody's blowing him a little too quick, and he had like some shaky moments. But I'm on the Tony wagon now. I can't deny him.
He's real good. He's real good with Patriots. Like, it seems like he knows the Patriots offense better than he knows the Cowboys offense.
Oh yeah, he called out every Gronk. This one's going to Gronk and to Edelman. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he called real out the on the Michelle run. He said, "Oh, he's checking out of the sneak. He's going to put a guy in motion, and that usually means a run to the right." And boom, there it is.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad I'll be watching the Super Bowl on the solo, so I can hear and enjoy his commentary instead of at a big party where you can't hear anything. So,
well, you're always more than welcome here, my friend.
I appreciate it, man. We'll be seeing each other enough. It's all good.
People over, but yeah, so great week. We're pumped up here. I'm looking forward to. I'm going on a trip. I'm going to, as John alluded to, I'm going to Phoenix, leaving tomorrow. Today's Tuesday, leaving tomorrow Wednesday night for a trip to Phoenix for the Royal Rumble and for some relaxation and to get out of the 0-degree weather that we're experiencing here. So I plan on really, really studying the film, John, really coming in with some hot insights next Tuesday.
Yeah, we're going to have a hot preview.
Absolutely. So hope everybody enjoyed. This is essentially a little bit of a pod blast almost from us, but hope you enjoyed the analysis. We loved the games. I'm happy that we have Mr. D'Amato as a flag-waving member of Patriots Nation.
Welcome We're on aboard. To Atlanta.
Welcome aboard, John.
We're on to Atlanta.
We're on to Atlanta, baby. Senior's going to be so proud.
Like I explained to my fellow Giant fans, there's no reason for us to hate the Patriots. So.
You're right. You're right. You guys, you're the conquerors. 2-0.
Yeah, we were fortunate.
2-0. You can't take it. Away from you. Two of the most frustrating days of my life, right there, represented. But all right. So hopefully that's not the case next Sunday for Super Bowl Sunday. Really want Tom to get that sixth ring, and just extend this greatness as long as we can. And you haven't really started to hear it yet, but I think it's coming. I think it's coming. I think I mentioned this in the chats, but I've been a huge sports fan my whole life, and say my two least favorite guys, like the guys I hated the most, probably pretty easy to figure out, right? Not football players, Derek Jeter, Kobe Bryant. Hated him. Absolutely despised them, especially Kobe. Number of reasons.
But, well, as to all the Patriot haters, why don't you explain how hard it was for you as a Red Sox fan during the Yankees' reign of terror, winning 4 out of 5 years during those years? What were your feelings about towards the Yankees at that time?
Oh, I hated them. I hated them so much.
Did you ever say they got lucky? Did you say they cheated? Like with the when the fucking that little bastard stole the ball at the Orioles right fielder? Did you call them cheaters?
I was never one of those guys calling them cheaters. I mean, I gave credit, for the team. I mean, they were a great team, but that rivalry was real bitter at that time. And as a Red Sox fan, we were very much like they had the trump card to play on us, which is. The Yankee fans would do the thing where, it's not really a rivalry to us and we don't really give a shit. Like, it's even worse, I'd rather have them tell me to go fuck myself than...
Until 2004, yeah.
In my younger years, I almost got into a couple of little, physical altercations Yankee fans. My younger, wilder years. I remember one incident at a gas station in Phoenix that... It was no good. But the guy just saw my Red Sox hat and just started giving me a hard time. But the and I think that the patch thing's different. It's lasted a little bit longer. And they did obviously have they've given ammunition to these folks with the with the Deflategate and with Spygate and
See, once again, I'll be the neutral observer. Spygate was definitely that's not something that you guys should be proud of. But the Deflategate was total bullshit, garbage. I don't even count that as a black mark on your guys' record. The Spygate, now that's another story. That's I'm 50-50. That's something that you guys really should be proud of. But,
I don't
then
care
again,
what people say.
That was so long ago. What happened since? It wasn't like you guys stopped winning.
They're all coming around though, a little bit at a time. You keep winning. I heard Eric Dickerson, who has been beating the drum for the last 18 years. I heard him on Monday morning say, what else can I say? The guy's the GOAT, and they're the greatest team of all time, or something to that effect. And, I try not to get into arguments with folks. I mean, it's just like there really is – you listen to the arguments, there's really nothing to argue about, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
well, the one they come up with now is, Montana never lost the Super Bowl, so –
if he would have gotten to more, he probably would have.
Yeah, exactly. If he would have got to 11 or 9,
but, I mean, there's just – any arguments are convoluted, and then it's just, I mean, it's like arguments even before LeBron came around about, like, you know, it's saying Karl Malone is a better, you know, better player than Michael Jordan and stuff. It's just ridiculous. So I just enjoy it, but I hope that with the hate, with, you know, the full, a lot of the folks who hate the Patriots, the same way I hated Kobe and the same way I hated Jeter, when those guys were at the tail end, granted, when they had fought, I mean, being honest, it was when they had sort of lost a step and were still playing, like Kobe after he tore his Achilles, and Jeter in the last couple of years when they, you know, when they weren't quite themselves, and maybe because the team wasn't winning championships. But
what about when Michael had to friggin' end up with the Wizards?
Right. I never hated Michael Jordan. I always loved him. You know, but from a hater's perspective, I really appreciated those guys. I when they were on their way out, I said, Jesus, man, I hated these guys, but God, hating them made things so much more fun. And like, it's like a true, you know, you talk about true greatness. I mean, those guys are true greats, and they're not coming around again. And it's sad. It was sad that they were, it was sad that the careers were ending. It's sad I didn't get to root against them anymore. And I had the opportunity to give both of them a standing ovation, and then did that, because as much as I hated them at the time, I think a little hindsight is I hated them because of how goddamn good they were, you know? And so hopefully these folks who hate the Patriots and who have, you know, spend, you know, a lot of energy hating the Patriots, as Tom nears the end, there'll be maybe a glimmer of appreciation there for maybe football's not going to be quite as much fun because this great, you know, this dynasty's going to come to an end. But I don't know. That's just my two cents.
It'll be interesting. So you think Bill and Tom, they go out together, or Bill's going to hang on and try to?
I think it depends on when Tom wants to walk. I mean, if he's really going to try to play another 2, 3, 4 years, then they'll go out together, I think. The thing with him at his age is that, like I mentioned, Kobe with the Achilles, like, at one point or another, if he stays out there, he's probably going to get hurt. And getting hurt at 42, 43, you're probably not coming back, like, from a real, you know, from a real industry injury. The body's just can't take it anymore. So if he doesn't, honestly, if they win this game, nothing would make me happier than for him to retire. Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, it would be a very poetic to end it with the Rams the same way you began it with the Rams. What the hell else does the guy have to accomplish?
You got to beat the Buffalo Bills record of being the only team to go 4 Super Bowls in a row. You guys got to get 2 more, so right, you could be 5 in a row.
I just don't have it. I don't want to see Tom Brady at that, you know, just hanging on, not what he was moment of his career. You know, I'd rather see the guy go out on top. If anyone's earned it, that's just me. But I think Bill would like to try to win one without him.
Yeah, I don't think
that's an ego thing.
I don't think Bill wants to hang it up. I think, and even Mr. Kraft said, I hope Bill coaches into like his 80s or whatever the fuck he said. So
I mean, he really is. I mean, he's a phenomenal coach.
Yeah, but
I mean,
and also
the combination
I think he likes it.
Is something else. But I mean, he did go 11-5 without Brady, the one year without Brady. So I think that there's a part of Bill that would, you know, to test himself, would like to see what he could do without Tom.
Yeah,
got a little dusty here in the studio talking about these guys. I mean, you got to think, man. I mean, 2001, I was, God, what was that? I was 22 years old, and I'm going to be 40 this year. I mean, these guys have been, you know, I've essentially grown up and grown into, you know, been through a lot of stuff with these guys, always as a constant. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, a Patriots heavy podcast. I could see the the listenership going from 7 to 1.5.
There were only 2 games. What are we supposed to talk about? We talk about the Bears offseason plans. I love you. I love the Bears fans. But
who do you think the Chiefs are going to pick up for defensive corner? I've seen some Rex Ryan or rumors.
Bring him in, Rex. I think that would be a good move. Rex and Andy be the
Jesus.
They'd be the... like a earthquake and typhoon.
There'll be some celebratory buffet. I don't think there's enough McDonald's and Burger King in the world for that crew.
Christ. All right, on that note, for Mr. D'Amato of the Cowboy, we'll see you guys in a week. What a week.
All right. I'll try to come up with some Rams heavy predictions next week, but it doesn't look good, guys. It doesn't look good.
All right. We out.